Hi, and welcome to GrowPod, where we talk about the fighting edge from the worlds of sports, media, finance, and politics. I am, as always, joined by my co-host, Kieran McKenna. And Kieran, we have to make the most out of this, but we're coming off a weekend
of two wins. 6 points in this flat.
Yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah, you need to take it when that happens. It's a great feeling the both of us had. Obviously, our game is Friday night, so then I had to wait till Saturday so we could both enjoy it.
We both enjoyed it.
It was a good feeling in the weekend.
There's a special buzz around the apartment.
Yeah.
This weekend, and hopefully going into next weekend with more games.
Long may continue.
We did also play Kieran a couple of weeks ago, but we will not mention that. Yeah, proceed. we have our guest, though. And he is another cool guest. Obviously, we only get cool guests on our on our podcast. His name is Matt Rosetta, and he's currently the chairman of North Six Group, a family office holding company with a vision to invest in passion, purpose, and progress. Now, North Six Group is wholly owned and has minority interests in a variety of investments across multiple sectors, including real estate, media, technology, travel, and sports and entertainment. And under his leadership, the agency has been ranked as one of the 50 most powerful agencies in the United States. And another asset owned by the North Six Group is Campobasso, which is a Serie C team. They hadn't been promoted in 32 years. Boom. They came in.
Promotion after new owners.
Promotion after new owners, as you do. So they're in the Serie C now. And then now, additionally, the group has recently purchased a 31% ownership stake in Italy's Serie B side, Ascoli, with the option to purchase up to 51% by the end of the 21-22 season. Ascoli being one of the most traditional and storied clubs in Italy.
We just learned that they are the fourth oldest club.
Fourth oldest. In Italy. And they have those quintessential black and white strips along with Juventus.
Yeah.
So there's another fun fact for you. And it was very enjoyable to talk to Matt in terms of his story, having grown up with his grandparents who were Italian immigrants and being cultivated into that Italian football culture.
Yeah.
And then to now building his company and now having stakes in two Serie B and Serie C clubs, which is pretty phenomenal.
Pretty cool. But his whole career and journey is just very interesting and impressive. After college, kind of working for Sony while also pursuing sports agency late at night. It's cool learning about how he didn't quite fancy that and the ins and outs of that industry, and now building up his own public relations agency to the point where they can now invest in other companies, and like you said, companies that have a purpose and a passion. It's not all about money.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more than that. And hearing about his investments in Italian football, yeah, great.
And we've had Jordan Gardner on. We've had Dane Murphy on. Both Americans with who work within own clubs in Europe.
Yeah.
And we touch upon a bit of the same topics in terms of how you expand a brand, how best practices you bring in, whatnot. And it's pretty interesting because again, Ascoli, Campobasso, quote unquote, smaller clubs in the sense of expanding a brand into America, for instance, and how you develop new revenue streams. He's been quoted saying that clubs have 6 or 7 revenue streams, and at best, you're lucky if 2 or 3 of them are exploited, basically. Yeah. And so to see how they'll go by that, he touches upon that, and it will be very interesting to follow Matt and the rest of his journey with these two Italian clubs. So
I feel like every time we do an episode, we just find a new team to support.
Exactly. We have to have a list at this point.
I know.
We got the Birmingham Legion in the USL
Legion, Alabama. Yeah. Got a few Danish teams after having Jordan Gardner on, and now we've got ourselves a Serie B Italian team.
Exactly. Beautiful. I mean, any excuse to visit Italy.
Right.
Really. So without further ado, we'll join us after the break for our chat with Matt Rosetta. This podcast is, as always, sponsored by Pimp Society. Pimp Society is a sustainable clothing brand that customizes and designs clothing of any choosing, whether it be slippers, jeans, vests, handbags, what have you. Go check them out on Instagram at Pimp Society, Facebook Pimp Society, or on their website, pimpsociety.no. Now to our chat with Matt Rosetta. we are joined by Matt Rezeta, and we, upon recording, we compared our views. We are in lovely Glasgow.
Yeah.
And you, Matt, you're in Italy. And where in Italy exactly are you?
So, yeah, I'm actually right outside of Rome right now in a beautiful place called Castel Gandolfo. It's right on the lake right here in Castel Gandolfo. It's about 20 minutes outside of Rome. I'm looking actually at a beautiful view of the lake right now. So life could be a lot worse than it is. We just got back from a pretty good result this weekend for Ascoli against Lecce. And I'm in Rome this week. We have a big game, road game on Saturday, right outside of Rome against Frosinone. So I'm having a great time out here. A lot of food, a lot of wine. And it's, and it's a beautiful weather too. So it's been a great, great week so far.
That sounds like the life.
What an incredible work life balance that is.
That sounds the life. We will touch upon that because you are involved in two clubs in Italy. But before that, we'd like to just touch upon how you got there, because it's a cool story in of itself. And then we'll touch upon the two respective clubs. But you came out of college, you worked for Sony BMG, which later on became Sony Music, if I'm not mistaken.
And that's right.
You raced home back from college and worked as a sports agent from your bedroom. And I'd just be curious as to how you started that process of becoming an agent from your bedroom and how you networked it, how you got clients, because obviously that is a lot easier said than done.
Yeah. Well, for the record, I failed at being a sports agent. My goal was to become a full-time professional sports agent and to start my own agency, but it was a major grind. I was 22, 23 years old. I didn't have any money. Especially at that time in the sports agent world, it was really the agents with the deeper pockets that always wound up winning. It wasn't always the good guy who got the big client and whatnot. So I kind of learned the hard way that being a sports agent wasn't all it was cracked up to be. And, my life was, it was super, I was grinding. I was working 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Sony BMG in Midtown Manhattan. And then I would race home. And from the hours of 7, 8 p.m. at night to 2 or 3 in the morning, this was every night, I was trying to get players placed with jobs overseas, primarily basketball players and primarily U.S. Basketball players that were looking to start a career in Europe. And I was really just trying to just build a Rolodex and a network of clients that could support me leaving my job at Sony and going out and doing it full time. But like I said, I found out real quickly that being a sports agent wasn't always cracked up to be. I got close to signing a bunch of big clients, several times, but in the end, it was always the big agent that swooped in with the deeper pockets and beat me out. So that convinced me not to try to become a full-time sports agent, but I learned a lot from that experience. And just like anything in business, you're going to make a lot of mistakes and you just got to learn from your mistakes. And then, 3 or 4 years later, when I started my first business officially, 6A, which was a PR and marketing services firm, I learned a lot from, being a sports agent. A lot of those lessons really helped me get that business started. And even frankly, to this day have helped me. So that's my journey, in a nutshell. We, from becoming a sports agent and working at Sony, fast forward 3 or 4 years after that, I finally was able to go out on my own. I started a PR and marketing firm, as I mentioned, called North Six Agency. Ironically, it's named after the street to which my grandparents immigrated from Italy, which, is a big part of my story. And also then eventually what brought me into Italian football, which I know we'll get into. But, now it's 12 years later, we now have North Six Group. So we're essentially an investment and marketing and operating holding company. And we own 8 different companies underneath us in all different sectors, media, marketing, sports and entertainment. And obviously N6A, which was the first business I started, is one of our, legacy bread and butter holdings in the, in the North Six Group family. So that unit's still going strong. There's about 50 or 60 employees that are working for that unit right now. We have a great management team in place led by Daniela Mancinelli, who was named the CEO about a year and a half ago. She's actually out in Italy with me right now. She joined the board of directors here at Ascoli. So she's been a big part of the football experience too. So it's been a great ride and I'm having a great time doing it. And it's been an incredible journey so far for me and for everyone who's been gracious enough to help me and support me along the way.
Matt, I read somewhere that your inspiration for business was built on the desire to offer better, innovative customer service and that business for you was more than just kind of selling a product or a service, but it was the way that you do business and how you treat your customers and your clients. And your company has also received special mention for its company culture. Are there any principles or values then that you abide by when you're trying to create this successful working culture?
Yeah, well, look, I think, you know, I think the golden rule always applies at a at a very fundamental level. I mean, if you're not treating people fairly and treating people like they want to be treated, obviously you're not going to be able to build any sort of sustainable, differentiated culture. So, I think all good cultures just kind of revolve around this principle of fairness. But beyond that, I mean, there's other things too. I mean, I think, you know, we're very big into experimentation. You know, I've always been one who hasn't been afraid to experiment, and I really encourage everyone in our family of companies to do the same, to go out and to try new things out, and don't be afraid to make bold decisions, and don't be afraid to fail and make mistakes. I think the greatest innovation is really born from experimentation. And in order to experiment, you have to be operating or working, I think, in a culture that really encourages experimentation. So I think, you know, experimentation is a big part of our culture as well. And then, of course, you know, togetherness. I mean, we're a really tight-knit team. I think there's a lot of, you know, bonding both before and after COVID that we've been able to do just through, you know, programs and all sorts of different differentiated experiences we've been able to provide employees. And I think the most important thing, frankly, is empathy. I think, you know, we really try to promote a culture of empathy where, you know, we're empathetic to one another. We understand the, you know, employees' lives inside and outside of the office. I think EQ, you know, is probably a more important trait in building culture nowadays than IQ. So, you know, you kind of put all those things on the table. And I think that's probably why we've been able to achieve, you know, some level of success, particularly when it comes to differentiating our service experience for customers. And of course, the employment experience for our employees. What we're learning, I mean, I think it's, you know, life is, and your career is no different. It's just a constant learning process. And I'm 12 years into business, and, you know, I'm learning just as much today as I was learning 12 years ago. It's just, you know, it's different lessons. And every time you learn a new lesson, it provides you with an opportunity to grow as a person and as a professional, and also to help other people around you grow. And I think that's been a big, you know, big part of the journey for me as well.
That's a great mindset to have, and you've obviously proven your quality, so to speak, within a business perspective. And if we transition into the Italian football investment, obviously this is a part business, but it's a bit more personal for you as well, Matt. Could you tell us why Italian football is so special to you, and what role it played during your childhood?
Sure, absolutely. Well, look, you know, Marcus and Kieran, I'm just to give you guys a sense of why we even got into football in the first place. So I got to a point in my career, you know, it was 11 years into it at the time when we made our first football investment. It was in Campobasso. They were a club in the fourth tier of Italy at the time. And we were fortunate enough to win our league championship. And we took the team up to Serie C, the third tier in Italy. It was their first time reaching the third tier in 32 years. So it was just an incredible experience. I just sort of got to a point in my career where, you know, I was looking at the world around me, and I was saying, you know what, like, we've been really blessed over the past 11 years. We had really built a great company, or, you know, we were starting to invest in other companies too at that time. And I just didn't want to get involved in businesses, and I didn't really need to get involved in businesses at that point in my career that I wasn't passionate about, and with operators or entrepreneurs that I didn't, you know, want to help, and I didn't have great chemistry with. I just didn't need to get involved with those types of businesses at that stage in my career. So I really looked at myself in the mirror and made a commitment that I was only going to support businesses in our, you know, North Six group in the holding company that were focused on passion, purpose, and progress. They had to have some kind of passion. I had to be passionate about the lines of business. They had to be purposeful in some respect, and they had to be progressive. You know, they had to take a legacy business and sort of turn it on its head and really bring a level of innovation and impact to those business units. So anyway, I was sort of looking at the world around me, and I was saying, look, I'm at a stage in my career where I really just want to help grow businesses that I'm passionate about, or we're passionate about, and, you know, have purpose and progress behind them. And, you know, then that, so all signs pointed toward football, Italian football particularly, as one of the first sectors we were going to invest in. And that just goes back, you know, Marcus, like you were alluding to earlier, that just goes back to my childhood. You know, I grew up very close with my grandparents. They were hardworking immigrants. My grandfather was a diehard Italian football fan. I mean, some of the greatest memories I had of my childhood were waking up Sunday mornings, watching Serie A. Back then it was the best, you know, league in the world, bar none. And so, you know, and I obviously named our agency, our original agency, and now North Six Group after my grandparents. So my grandparents have just been such a big part of my journey and my story that I thought it would be apropos to go out and to invest in a business that was really connected to them in some way. And Italian football really represented my childhood and so many great memories I had of my childhood. And, you know, on a greater scale, I think it really represents, football represents the immigrant experience and the immigrant journey probably more than any other sport in the world. I mean, or maybe, you know, arguably even any other activity or hobby. So I thought beyond just investing in Italian football, which would give me a chance to really relive my childhood, it also gave me a chance to stay true to our roots and our core and our values, which are, you know, which revolve around the immigrant story and sacrifice and hard work and all of the things that are so emblematic of, you know, the immigrant journey. So, you know, Campobasso was the first team we invested, as I mentioned, and we were really blessed. The first year we took the team from the fourth tier to the third tier, got a chance to celebrate with the city. It was just an incredible, incredible experience. And then ultimately, just like anything else in business, you know, it's all networking, you know, it's all relationship building and networking. And we actually developed a pretty, you know, pretty quickly a reputation for being a value added operator and investor in these Italian football clubs. You know, they saw us take this little sort of unknown challenger club in Campobasso and put them on the map and win our league and build a, you know, considerable market share, market presence internationally. And through that experience, we really got a chance to meet so many amazing people. And one of the people I met is Massimo Pulcinelli, who is a super successful entrepreneur. He's the CEO of Brickifer, which is essentially the Home Depot of Italy. It's the largest hardware and home goods retail chain in Italy. And he owned Ascoli, which, you know, is one of the most historic clubs in Italy, 123-year-old club. They've played 40 years in Serie A and Serie B combined. I mean, just an incredible, incredible club. And we basically hit it off and we sat down at a table and started talking about the future for Ascoli and what his plans were. And it just seemed like an incredible fit from day one. We just had awesome synergies. And that's what led us to Ascoli. You know, a few months later, we wound up consummating a deal to come in as 31% owners in Ascoli. And that's been just an incredible experience so far. I mean, everything we experienced in Campobasso really has been amplified in Ascoli. I mean, it's just, you know, it's magnified in so many ways just when you're dealing with a club at the, you know, with the tradition and history and at the scale of a club like Ascoli.
Spoke about on this podcast before the challenge in expanding the club brand internationally and globalizing the brand and penetrating new markets and getting new fans and opening up new revenue streams while at the same time staying loyal to the local fans and the local community and respecting the tradition and the heritage of the club. My first question is, why do sometimes foreign owners get this wrong? And secondly, for yourself, how do you develop a brand and a story that connects to new markets for the clubs that you're involved in, Campobasso and Ascoli?
Sure. So I think the first part of your question in terms of why they get it wrong, look, you know, we did a lot of R&D and, you know, research before we went into both of our Italian football investments. And I think, you know, at least in my experience, one of the things that we noticed was that some owners, especially foreign owners, they try to overcorrect things and they try to go in and apply too much of an Americanized or a Westernized approach in their strategy to some of these clubs. And these clubs need a more modernized approach in many respects. They need to be managed differently. They need, you know, many of them need more, you know, disciplined focus on P&L management and on financial management. But you can't totally turn these clubs upside down. I mean, these clubs are historic clubs that have been a part, you know, a really important part and piece of the fabric of not just the cities that they're in, but in, you know, in our case, especially with Ascoli, a part of the fabric of Italian football history, which is, you know, which is sacred in Italy. So, you know, I think you can't go in there. It's a very fine line you have to walk where you do need to go in and you need to be, in many cases, much more disciplined and focused on management and numbers and also, you know, innovative. You know, your question, Kieran, just around building a brand internationally, I think these clubs need innovation, especially in Italy. Italy, you know, I'm kind of generalizing, but so many of the Italian clubs do a really poor job of properly exporting their brand internationally and building content platforms and really attracting new audiences and fan bases and, you know, leaning on marketing and all of that stuff has historically been, you know, a real weak spot for many of these Italian clubs. So you definitely need to go in and run much more of an innovative playbook, but you don't want to overdo it where you're compromising the culture and you're compromising the history and you're compromising all of the things that make these clubs so unique and so attached to the communities in which they've always represented. So I think that's been the biggest mistake that a lot of these ownership groups, especially the foreign ownership groups, have made, is they either understate or underestimate the importance of the history of these clubs to the cultures in which they're investing, because you're making an investment in a culture just as much as you're making an investment in a football club. So if you go in there and you overlook the cultural significance of these clubs, it's a recipe for disaster. If you just go concentrate exclusively on building the club internationally at the expense of compromising things that make the club unique provincially or locally, that's a major, major mistake. So I think that's been the biggest mistake a lot of these ownership groups have made, is they might have, you know, understated or disregarded in some respects the importance of the local culture, and they've just kind of went with an overly westernized approach, and you just can't do that at all. So I think that's probably been the biggest mistake. And then your second question, I think, was around how do you accomplish market share internationally? Was that right?
Yeah.
Well, look, I think, you know, I think just everything I said creates opportunity, because, you know, you look at Italy, look at Serie A, you have Juventus, Roma, Inter, AC Milan, you know, maybe Napoli, you know, that's really it. I mean, outside of those five clubs, there's really not many other clubs that have a real significant piece of the international market outside of Italy. You know, I'm primarily talking about North America. So I think there's been a great opportunity that's been created for clubs like ours. And in terms of our positioning, like in Ascoli, for example, I think you need to accentuate all of the differentiators your club has to offer, just like you would with any other business. These clubs have differentiators. So in the case of Ascoli, it's the fourth oldest club in Italy. We were founded in 1898. You know, only Juventus, Genoa, and Udinese are older than we are. It is, you know, one of the most historic clubs in all of Italy. They played 40 seasons in Serie A and Serie B. It's, you know, they call it La Regina delle Marche. And, you know, Le Marche is kind of this hidden gem of a region in Italy that many people, you know, don't know about internationally. They know about Tuscany and they know about Umbria and Lazio, but they might not know about Le Marche. So I think that those are all things that make this club so unique and different. And I can go on. I mean, there's so many other things. You know, the club's branded as the woodpecker is the mascot of the club. It was based on an ancient Roman story that there was a woodpecker actually that guided the Romans, or the Piceni, Ascoli Piceno, to Ascoli. And it's, you know, and that's how Ascoli was founded. It's an ancient Roman story. So there's all these incredible stories to Ascoli that really differentiate them. And I think that's how you succeed, Kieran. I think you succeed in building a brand internationally by really looking at what your club has to offer that no other club can offer. And then it's all on execution. It's on, you know, telling that story through content and branding, and, you know, visualization now is a big part of that, and merchandise. And, you know, there's all of those things, I think, that are resources and tools to execute. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it begins with just sitting down and understanding what your club has to offer that makes it unique and different, and then, you know, accentuating it when you export the brand internationally. So that's been our experience. You know, in Campobasso, it was a little different. In Campobasso, the club hadn't been promoted in 32 years. The club was really an underdog club. So we, you know, really went very hard off your dog, you know, story. Because everyone kind of relate to an underdog. So, you know, and those were the differentiators that Campobasso had to offer. I think Ascoli's differentiators have more to do with tradition and legacy and history and, you know, all of that stuff. So, you know, that's sort of my perspective on it, you know, just what your club has to offer that's unique and different. And then obviously executing through marketing, media, content, merchandise, whatever, in a way to bring that story to life so that the international audience begins to, you know, have an affinity for the brand.
And on the topic of differentiation, you've mentioned that you looked at Ascoli as a model, or Atalanta, excuse me, as a model for what Ascoli might achieve, rooted in the fact that they grew from being a provincial club fluctuating between Serie B and Serie A for decades to now one of the elite clubs in Europe. And just for context for the listener, they run a profitable and sustainable business predicated on developing young talent, have them help contribute at the top of the table, optimize their value, and then sell to larger clubs. what are the short-term and long-term steps? This is obviously a very loaded question, but just immediate thought, what are the long-term and short-term steps for this to be implemented in order to achieve this?
In terms of our long-term goals?
Long-term and short-term, in terms of achieving a similar model to what, say, Atalanta have achieved.
So look, I think, you know, for me, everything revolves around incremental revenue creation. And, you know, I know that sounds like such a business, you know, business thing to say, but the truth is, look, fans want to win and owners want to win and you got to win on the pitch. I mean, that's the bottom line. But in order to win on the pitch, you know, you need revenues. And in Serie B right now, like for Ascoli, in Serie B, there's 20 clubs in Serie B, and within maybe a couple million euros of, you know, variance, all of these clubs essentially are generating the same revenue stream. You know, they're within, you know, a certain range that might be within, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 million euros of revenue. So what I think that creates an incredible opportunity where if you're a club like ours in Ascoli and you can go open up an international market and create new streams of revenue that, you know, now all of a sudden we're 5, 10, 15, maybe 20 million euros ahead of the pace in Serie B in terms of revenue creation, because we've been able to open up new streams of revenue in international markets. All of a sudden that now you have 10, 15, 20 million euros of incremental revenue, you can go reinvest on the pitch and you can build a pretty darn good club mm-hmm. to go win. So I think that to me is, you know, the key is opening up those streams of revenue internationally. And then obviously, so you could reinvest in the club, you know, in the product. The product is the team on the pitch. And in order to win on the pitch, obviously, you know, then you need to go execute. So just because you create more revenue opportunities doesn't mean you're going to make smart decisions. You still got to go make smart decisions and surround yourself with a great GM, you know, direttore sportivo, you know, CEO, direttore generale here in Italy, that's what they call them. So, you know, that's really what our strategy revolves around, is going out and opening up new streams of revenue in the international market so that we can beat the competition being the other, you know, near so clubs in Serie B, so that we can go out and create incremental streams of revenue and then reinvest those streams in revenue to give, you know, our fans an incredible product on the pitch. And the more, you know, the more money we can reinvest in winning on the pitch, the better chance we have to go up and build a sustainable project. And then, you know, you use Atalanta as a model. Obviously, there's a lot of components to the Atalanta strategy that made them successful. I mean, they invested in international scouting, particularly in Eastern European countries. They really developed their youth system. They ran a very disciplined, you know, financial operation with an eye constantly toward the P&L so that they didn't sustain losses that would be difficult to recover in the long term. Mm-hmm. So those are all kind of subsets. And those are things that, you know, once you have the revenue to go and reinvest, I think those are areas that we're going to look to invest in. But I think it all starts and ends really with creating new streams of revenue that the other clubs have not, for one reason or another, been able to achieve, you know, with an eye toward the international market.
Yeah, I heard that you were looking to Scotland for your club, actually.
What did you say, Rangers? You guys are big Rangers fans, I heard, right?
See, Matt's already getting involved with this Rangers Celtic, man. It's good. Good for him. Matt, listen, we have a few very short ending questions that we ask all our guests. We'll just rapid fire. First question is, what would your advice be for your 20-year-old self?
Well, number one, I think it would be to enjoy things more. You know, I think probably my 20-year-old self, I was just so, and I, you know, I still have in many respects, but back then particularly, I mean, it was just so young and hungry, and I just sometimes was just so focused on what was next that I didn't really take a chance to celebrate what we had achieved. And I think, you know, that's one of the biggest lessons I learned. You got to celebrate the wins, you know, you got to learn from the losses and you got to celebrate the wins. And I probably spent too much time thinking about the losses than I did celebrating the wins. So that, you know, that's one thing, is just kind of go slow, enjoy the ride. You know, this thing, your career, it's a curve, you know, it's a curvy line. It's not a straight line. You don't go from point A to point B to point C. And, you know, I didn't go from my basement to owning, you know, 8 companies and a football club in, you know, overnight. I went there in a very curvy way where I learned so many lessons along the way. I made a whole lot of mistakes, and, you know, the curves can be really challenging, but it's also what makes the process unique and, you know, beautiful in many respects. So, you know, that's another thing I would probably tell myself, is just sort of enjoy the curves, because they're going to come, and you know, you can't avoid them. And when they come, just, you know, take them as they come and learn from them and enjoy them. Because at the end of the day, you know, those curves really are what are going to make your career in terms of whether or not you have the, you know, the ability to navigate through them, around them.
Second question, Matt, what are your non-negotiables in working with other people?
Well, look, you know, trust is obviously number one. I mean, we have to have mutual trust. I mean, if for whatever reason, you know, if you don't trust me or I don't trust you, the relationship is not going to work out. So, I mean, that certainly is a non-negotiable. There has to be a, you know, a reciprocal mutual feeling of trust between, you know, two parties in a working relationship. I think that's a fundamental non-negotiable. You know, I have a bad news, light speed approach, which is a non-negotiable. You know, basically my, you know, my direct report team, on my direct report team, bad news has to travel faster than good news, because bad news is very, you know, bad news is the lifeblood of all businesses. You know, and it's a part of, it's just a harsh reality of every business. You're going to be dealing with bad news all the time. So the quicker you can treat it, the quicker you can, you know, address it, the quicker you can solve it, the quicker you can move on and become a better business. But if I don't know about it, if you don't know about it, you can't solve it. So I really try to encourage a culture where bad news has to travel quickly. So, you know, if something happens, we could figure it out as a team. We'll solve it. We'll get through it just like we always have, but it's got to come to my desk as quickly as, you know, you see it or you receive it. So, you know, that's another sort of non-negotiable of mine, is that bad news has got to travel super fast.
I like that one. And last but not least, Matt, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Well, I really don't know, you know, because if you told me 5 years ago, I'd be sitting here in Italy at Castel Gandolfo looking at this beautiful lake, you know, thinking about a big soccer match that the club that we owned had, you know, in 5 days, I probably would have told you you're crazy. So, you know, I just like to sort of take my career and take life as it comes and enjoy it. You know, certainly at this stage of my career, I'm trying to enjoy it a little bit more than I was before. So, you know, I don't really know where we're going to be in 5 years. You know, I believe it's going to be somewhere really big, and I think it's going to be a great journey. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that are super, you know, happy and motivated and passionate about where we are, but you know, we're going to take it one step at a time. I think that's the key.
Brilliant, Matt. I appreciate you so much taking the time. You have a big match, like you say, against Frosinone, if I could correct the...
Yeah, it's perfect. Correctly.
Yeah, that's my 6 weeks in Bologna for a summer for you. Good luck for that upcoming game. And we really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us today and spreading the word of Ascoli in Campobasso.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you, guys. Appreciate the time, Marcus. Appreciate the time, Kieran, and keep up the great work.
Thanks for listening to our 30-second episode with Matt Rizzetta. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Please, if you fancy, follow and subscribe, and then we will catch up with you in a couple of weeks.